Welcome to Decades From Home, a podcast about Germany. I'm Nick Houghton of 40%German.com, and I'm joined by intrepid co-host Kat and our award-winning producer, Simon Josie, to discuss the weird and wonderful side of living in Germany. Hey, Simon. Hey, Kat. And Simon says award-winning producer in my script. I think it's time you fessed up and told us about what's all this award business about.
Yeah, it's true, Nick. I did win an award for my podcasting producing skills, the 2024 New Zealand Podcast Awards, the podcast that I produce each week for an independent news or journalist there. It's called The Hoon. And The Hoon, just for your information, is the collective noun for the bird, the kaka. We've talked about the kaka before. Yes, it is a real kind of bird in New Zealand, native bird of New Zealand. But yeah, so the podcast that I produce got second place in the category of best current affairs show.
Oh, wow. Congratulations, Simon.
Very well done.
I think that deserves a bit of a round of applause, yeah.
Yeah. Do I get a pay rise now?
No, but we'll let you put your trophy in the background while we record.
We can give you a 100% pay rise, because what's 100% of zero?
Yeah, that would have been the smart answer, yes.
I was going to say, I'm glad you told us what hoon meant, because I thought it was the sound I made when one of my small children kicks me in the knackers. Hoon!
I remember as a colloquial term for a hoon was like a boy racer.
Exactly. That's why we sort of need to explain every time we say, oh, it's called the hoon, because the thing is that the guy that I work for, he produces a Substack newsletter, and that Substack newsletter is called The Kaka, after the bird. And that's the link between the podcast, The Hoon, and his Substack, which is called The Kaka, it being the collective noun for kaka.
Okay.
Any more questions?
I feel like we've done enough free promotion for your rival podcast. So,
yeah, I don't know about rival.
I don't like this two-timing, Simon. I think we should have a talk after the mics go off.
Righto.
We could chip in and get him an award together, Nick. We could get Simon an award.
Yeah.
And what then kind he of got award? An award for our podcast as well.
Yeah, what kind of award could we get him?
Best producer.
I guess the thing is that, you know, I've managed to bring glory and honor to one podcast. If you guys step up your game, maybe we can get one for this podcast too. Because clearly I'm not the one holding us back, right?
I feel like we're the foot off. Jeez, okay. Kai's putting pressure on us now. Oh, no. I feel like we're the futsal team, right? This is where you noodle about and you practice and you get your skills up, and then you go off and be a galactico for another podcast.
I'll stop being a blowhard and for a minute be serious. That's absolutely the case. That basically my whole workflow has been refined and tested on this podcast. So you are, in fact, my guinea pigs.
We're just like a Frankenstein's monster of a podcast, just going, oh! No, your levels, Nick. Okay!
I hope you don't feel used.
Not a bit. Anyway, that's about your awards. Kat, we need to get some awards. I'll give you an award, you give me an award, and then we'll be sorted.
Okay, we'll do awards for Christmas, yeah?
Oh, yeah. That's it. That's the Christmas episode sword.
We'll have an award show.
We're going to have an award show where we give each other awards. That's concerning. Okay, moving onwards and upwards. Kat, you saw something quite festive related and weird, if my script is to be believed. You saw apparently a parade of mopeds celebrating Christmas going through the streets of Köln. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. Completely unexpected. I just happened to be in the center of town at a vegan potluck dinner, and all of a sudden some people gathered around the window, and more people gathered, and then they opened it up and it was a complete parade of, people, mostly Father Christmas, right? But there were also angels, and there was somebody saw a tree.
Tree. Oh, right, a Christmas tree. I thought you meant just like an oak.
Yeah, it's pretty adventurous to drive around in a tree costume on a bicycle. But
it really is.
Apparently it's a thing. And I didn't find very much on the internet about it, but it seems to happen in other parts of Germany as well.
I got two questions about your story, Kat. The first question being, do you not think Father Christmas is more of like a Harley rider than a scooter rider?
I guess you're limited in an urban environment. You know, you need a big place to park a big bike.
I suppose the practicalities. It's hard to get that on a roof with reindeer. And the second one is, what was the best thing at the vegan potluck?
The best thing at the vegan potluck was the pecan pie. I got a hold of that recipe and I'm definitely going to be giving it a try. I would have not believed it was vegan if nobody had told me.
Wow, okay, that good. Hey, send that recipe my way as well. I might have something that'll pair quite nicely with a pecan pie, or at least I think so in my own imagination. I went to a little bit of a tour of Christmas markets on Saturday with a very good friend, and I've discovered the correct beverage of choice for Christmas 2024, and it is hot orange with rum and amaretto. That's the drink that we'll all be imbibing over the festive period.
Orange, rum, and amaretto.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. That's quite a potent little mix. So what are your proportions there?
We got orange and rum that was pre-mixed, and then I banged in a shot of amaretto. Okay. Actually, that's not true. We asked for a shot, and the guy just poured the bottle in. Like, he just held the bottle up for a significant amount of time, pouring amaretto into the cup. Bearing in mind, amaretto is only 20%, so it's not too aggressive. But
how did you feel the next day?
Do you know, there's a special kind of hangover you get from drinking really sugary drinks. And it was one of those. I had lots of energy, but I definitely felt like I'd had a couple of drinks too many. But yeah, the other one was Glühwein, was just a shot of amaretto. And just put cheese on it, drink amaretto. That's the policy for 2024.
We're in December, so you can do that now at breakfast, right, as well with your coffee.
Oh yeah, geez, I'd forgotten about that. I got this really amazing thing a few years ago as a Lebkuchen liqueur. That was great in a cup of coffee. I basically just became an alcoholic until that bottle was like gone. I was just like, oh, it's 12 o'clock. I'll just have some Lebkuchen liqueur in my coffee. Yeah, excess. Yeah, the next thing on the docket is actually, again, back to you, Kat. There's a bit of an apology you need to make. Apparently you made some kind of Christmas tree mix-up on the podcast last week.
I did. It was certainly a faux pas on my part. At least I think it is. I would like to retract something that I said on the last episode, which was wrong, incorrect. And it was observational on my part that I'd like to correct because I've since checked. And all of the Christmas trees that I thought were real were actually fake. So I have not seen a real Christmas tree yet.
Oh dear, I think we're going to have to dock your pay, Kat. What's minus 100% of zero?
Oh no.
yeah, I was surprised when you said it, but I was willing to believe you, Kat. But yeah, I guess those fake trees are as popular as Simon suggested.
Do we have to go back and check everything you've said on the podcast? I'm just wondering about that now.
I feel like we might have to. Well,
now that I've started doing it, maybe we should make a point of... We could go through old episodes.
You first.
I'll go back and figure out all the things. But look, hey, I was right about Charlie XCX, wasn't I? Hello.
In what way?
That it didn't catch on in Germany.
Yeah. But was that the Brat summer?
Yeah.
And part of it's Brat winter as well. So there's plenty of time.
Well, it is in England, but she's not touring in Europe as far as I know.
Not yet. Just wait till next summer, then it'll be the perfect time for it. I don't know if it's Brat winter, but I do know what's happening on Sunday this week, which is the Krampus run that has been on for the last few years. It's an Austrian tradition, the Krampus, which is this demonic entity that for some reason is mates with St. Nicholas and basically acts as the punishment for the naughty children. And they do a Krampus run in Munich. I've yet to finalize my decision on whether I'm going to go because I'm a little scaredy cat and I'm frightened. I might get taken away by the Krampus, but I'm sorely tempted to go into Munich and see these terrifying beasts run down the street cracking whips and being generally demonic. It sounds like quite a fun tradition.
It sounds kind of on brand with your other interest of like getting dressed up and running around in a field.
But I don't have my pike. If I had my pike and my breastplate,
you could defend yourself against the Krampus.
I reckon I could take out a couple of Krampus before they got me. Is it Krampi? is that right? Is that the plural?
I do not know.
Krampuses. Oh, God, I've got terrible Krampuses. So, if you're in the Munich area, go check it out. You might see me being eaten by a Krampus.
Or holding a Krampus skewer.
or taking all comers. We will see. From a sort of one fairly terrifying but not so awful tradition, we're moving on to a news story that's been covered on social media, but a few other outlets as well, called Klazom, which is a festival which occurs every December 5th on the North Sea island of Borkum. Part of the festival is a parade in which women are caught and beaten with cow horns by costumed men, the eponymous Klazoms. A report by ARD's Panorama TV show entitled Das Schwiegende Insel von Borkum Klazom Feiert, roughly translated, is the kind of secret of the island and this celebration of Klazom. And it was about the event itself, lots of hidden camera footage, and it's caused a lot of outrage across the country this week. In the report, women speak anonymously on camera about aggressive attacks. There's footage of women being kind of grabbed off the street and essentially spanked by groups of men dressed in kind of furs and stuff. Last year, a team filmed how women were held on the street during the festival by men known as fenger or catchers, and how the so-called Klazoms hit them on the buttocks and legs with a cow horn. The custom is said to date back to the time when whalers were the main inhabitants on the island, and men traditionally returned to Borkum at the end of the year after several months at sea and used the custom to make it clear that they and not the women were in charge again. So all very 2024, eh, guys? I'm not sure what to make of this story. What did you see any of these reports? Have you seen the documentary, perhaps?
I have not seen the documentary. No. It's unsettling, but kind of not surprising. It is pretty awful that it's stuff like that is happening. But is it really that secret? Or do you think people might go the extra because they know they could?
It feels like it's really contained. I mean, watching it, it had every trope of kind of these discussions about traditions that are well past their best, shall we say, if they were ever not past their best. A lot of people kind of defensive about it and getting quite upset and angry that people are criticizing this ancient festival as the, from their perception, or this thing that we've always done it on and it's always been fine and don't know what the problem is now. But then when you actually see the footage of it, it doesn't look like the women who are being caught are having a great time, and it looks like the blokes who are hitting them and I mean, this sounds ridiculous, but it looks excessive. Of course it would do.
And they're in costumes, so they're all anonymous, right?
Yeah, that's part of it.
I think
as well.
That's the worst bit of it, right? Mm. That, you know, even if they do something, they won't be held accountable of it because they're in a crowd and everyone's dressed the same.
Exactly. And it's like there's groups out to catch them, and then I just felt it just didn't look good in any way, shape or form, and none of the responses seemed to be satisfactory. One response in particular came from the Borkumer Jungens Association, which organises the Klazom Festival, and they announced that the custom of hitting should be completely abolished after the ARD documentary was televised. They said, "We expressly distance ourselves from any form of violence against women and apologise for the historic actions of past years." However, they also responded that the tradition has never been the core of the festival for the whole island. And they also said that it's almost not taken place at all in recent years, which seemed odd given the footage from last year. And at the same time, the island's mayor, Jürgen Achermann, explained that the images presented were distorted. It wasn't the true image of the customs that they celebrate. And he said, "In my view, the reporting is biased and dubious. The assessment is shared by many residents of the island." He claimed, and it all feels a bit Wicker Man, if you ask me. Apparently, in the past, the island community has tried to shield the event from public and the press, and have asked participants not to post anything on social media about the tradition, which only adds to the levels of suspicion, I think, about how this festival has been allowed to continue for so long.
Yeah, there's lately been some criticism of generally of institutional responses to violence against women. the German Institute for Human Rights has called for action in a report that came out this week. It's called Monitor Violence Against Women. And it's this organization's first comprehensive report on the subject and outlines that violence against women is really common in Germany and not enough is done to prevent it. In 2023, an average of 728 women and girls every day were victims of physical violence in this country. And on top of that, 394 victims of psychological violence every day. And around 85% of the victims of sexual violence are women and girls. But the report also makes clear that there is no way of really knowing what the real numbers are, how many cases go unreported. Gender-based violence often takes place in the immediate environment of those affected, and it happens mostly to young women between the ages of 18 and 20. Experts have said that the extent of the violence is unbearable. One expert said, we finally need an overall strategy for politics, administration and the courts to better protect those affected and put an end to the violence.
Kat's dream of a winter filled with juicy political tidbits, which she expressed only two episodes back, might finally be coming to some kind of fruition. After weeks of non-stories since the end of the German governing coalition, German politics has gone all Shakespearean again, but not the respected Royal Shakespeare kind. Oh no, listeners. The scandal rocking Germany in the last few days is very much the Shakespeare of a local amateur dramatic society, all wobbly sets and slightly pissed actors.
Oh, it's a pantomime.
It really is. It's getting very pantomimey. There's a lot of, he's behind you. It's perfect seasonal fare. The excitement began last month when the FDP effectively brought down the government after disagreeing about the budget. At the time, FDP leader Christian Lindner claimed it was the fault of his former governing partners, the Greens and the SPD. However, in the last weeks, a document leaked to journalists that has outlined plans for what was described as D-Day. The FDP initially denied the document existed, but then were forced to publish the said document in its entirety. And the new line has become, well, Christian Lindner didn't know about D-Day. The document itself contains a, and this is in quotes, D-Day process pyramid that begins with phase one, called ignition. Another version speaks of impulse and ends with phase four, beginning of the open field battle. Phase two and three deal with setting the narrative, qualitatively and quantitatively. So I don't know about this document too much, but it does feel like Linda was planning on either going to war or planning a paintball tournament for this year's FDP team bonding weekend. Have you come across this document? Have you seen it? What do you make of it?
I've seen bits, but I don't know what the D in D-Day stands for. I've got some guesses.
Go on, give me some of your guesses.
Deliverance. Deliverance.
Ding, 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 ding.
Then we have the obvious choice, Deutschland.
Deutschland Day. Yeah, okay.
And I guess the third one would probably be just Destruction Day.
I think Destruction Day seems on par with things like ignition, impulse.
What about Dickhead?
We've got to keep Simon in his place. Now he's got an award. There's a podcast I really like from New Zealand, and they have their producer also talking on the show sometimes, but they call him Buttons. And I think it's so funny because it's just like, he just does the buttons. So yeah, twiddle your knobs, Simon.
Oh no. Oh dear. If only you could see the look Simon has on his physog right now.
Just remember, I can make you say anything I want.
Watch, this is his casual kind of threats that he throws.
He doesn't
out.
Need AI to wreak havoc in our lives. He's got more than enough.
He's got enough to program us to say pretty much what he wants at any time. Anyway, back to this D-Day document from the FDP. The document lists various options for how the FDP could leave the traffic light coalition and how it could communicate this to the public. It also contains a spuriously named CL statement. So CL, who has the initial CL in the FDP? Oh, could be anyone, couldn't it? It could be... the leader, Christian Lindner. So it does seem that his claims that he didn't know anything about it are a bit odd, given that they're writing statements for him. The statement itself reads like a draft of a speech that Lindner would give in the event that the FDP had left the traffic light coalition. This is also entitled D-Day Scenarios and Measures and describes a scenario in which the former coalition partners, SPD and Greens, do not support the economic reforms demanded by the FDP. So we've got this kind of exit strategy outlined with a potential statement for Christian Lindner. There was another option, though, because when you're wargaming, why have only one option? This other option for how the Traffic Coalition might fall apart was discussed within the document. The FDP could have announced that the end of the coalition on social media, including an allusion to the famous so-called citrus selfie. Now, we might have forgotten what the citrus selfie was. I had, in fact, totally forgotten it because I don't remember it ever being called the citrus selfie, but here we are. It was a photo, a famous photo that was taken as the coalition was forming back in 2021, and I think it was in December, and it had FDP politicians Lindner and Volker Wissing, and they posed with the Greens' Robert Habeck and Annalena Baerbock as the negotiations on this red-green-yellow government began in sort of autumn 2021. And this would be alluded to and used as a way of kind of twisting the knife a little bit. And the social media post would say, traffic light coalition began with a selfie and ends that way too. And there's also an alternative where they might have given a press conference on television. And various other possibilities that they could have expressed. So is anyone particularly surprised that this document exists, that the claims by FDP leader Christian Lindner that there was nothing to do with him and he had no responsibility for it are actually true? It does feel very much like the FDP.
It feels like something that they would do, definitely. And that way, not surprising at all. And maybe also a strategy to do something like this just after a tumultuous event like the election in the US. Like that was directly afterwards that this all kicked off.
I don't know. I can't work out what they were really thinking. And the document doesn't really give much away. It looks like the kind of document you'd find on like an episode of The Apprentice in the UK. I mean, the team names themselves are already laid out in the document. What is it? Ignite! That sounds like one of the team names from The Apprentice. So it could easily be something of that vein. Have you got anything you want to say about this, Simon, before we
move on? I don't think I've got anything. It's got nothing to do with awards. So,
in response to the... Sorry. Okay. He doesn't need to say anything now. He's won an award. In response to the publication of the document, the FDP General Secretary and the FDP Federal Secretary both resigned. Although, as I pointed out before, Christian Lindner did reject having any knowledge of this particular document, the D-Day document. He was questioned on AOD's Karen Mioska on Sunday evening, and he maintained his denial that he didn't see the document. And anyway, he sees lots of documents, and he can't really say what he saw or when he saw it. And actually, he went on to say, a bigger kid did it, or a magic dog, or maybe a clown, one of the two or the three.
It's not the first time I've heard of something like this. You know, politicians, it's all they can do is deny, 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 right? Yeah. But I mean, his chances of getting a power shot completely out the window now, right?
They're really falling in the polls. But he just looked so bad on Mioska. He looked so, so bad. He seemed on the defensive constantly. In his denials, and I'm obviously joking about the magic dog. It'd be funny if he did say that. But his denials were basically amounted to that kind of childlike... kind of looking at the floor and going, no, it wasn't me. It was somebody else. It didn't look very good at all.
Wow. And if he didn't know, it makes it even kind of worse that people are plotting social media campaigns for him without his knowledge. That makes him look like foolish.
A little bit. Süddeutsche Zeitung had basically posited that the party is the Christian Lindner party, and the very idea that he wouldn't have no idea what was going on is kind of laughable. And I think I tend to agree with that assessment.
Fair call, fair call. But it's an Advent's churchin, so I'll take it.
With stories about cocaine pizzas in Dusseldorf and the tiramisu thief in Leipzig last week, our last section of the show is quickly becoming a study in the farcical nature of German criminality. This week isn't any different, dear listeners. From a Class A takeaway and a confection criminality, we bring you the story of a hapless thief who attempted a daring escape right into a pile of manure. Right, now is the point in this segment where I want to offer the opportunity to my co-hosts to make as many Back to the Future references as this very podcast can hold. So can we all together now say the famous line from Back to the Future? Manure?
Yeah.
I hate manure.
I hate manure.
Simon and his award are very, very quiet at this point.
He's resting on his laurels. I can hear it.
You know, no, I'm gonna be honest here and say I cannot remember that line.
How can you not? It's an iconic line from Back to the Future.
From
the
first one.
Every single Back to the Future. And every single one he gets covered in manure.
Oh, I can't believe that passed me by.
Manure,
I feel quite embarrassed. Do you think
manure.
They'll take the award off me now?
Yeah, I think you definitely, if that award was for remembering films of the late 80s and early 90s, it would be gone right away.
I mean, I saw that movie in the picture theater. Guys, you probably wouldn't be aware of that. But
I was too young to see the first one. I saw the second one and the third one in the cinema. You feel old. I feel old. We all feel a little bit old.
So you're going to take us back on a similar kind of ride with the next story?
Are you ready for this? This story has ups, downs, and turnarounds.
If that's the intro, I better get my seatbelt fastened.
Okay. Get the popcorn. So our story starts, like so many police procedurals, with a routine traffic stop. A police patrol wanted to check a van, and the officers signaled the van to pull over at around 1 a.m. on Sunday morning. But the driver stepped on the gas, broke through a fence of a farmer's field, this was just outside Eichenbarleben in the Burda district. The officers saw the passenger door of the car fly open and a person jump out while the vehicle was still driving. Now, sensibly, the police decided not to pursue the vehicle further due to the impassable terrain. However, they soon discovered the van parked nearby. Both the vehicle and the license plates were stolen, and there was various burglary tools and suspected stolen goods inside. A short time later, the officers also found the escaped passenger. This is another quote from the report. He wanted to hide on a farm. Unfortunately, he chose a silo tank filled with liquid manure as his hiding place, from which he could no longer climb out without help. Oh, God. Ugh. Okay. Question. You're a criminal running from the police. You find yourself on a farm and you jump in what looks like a possible hiding place and you realize too late you're waist deep in cow shit. How quickly do you give up?
Oh my God, he must be from the city. You'd never jump into something without knowing how deep it was.
I mean, that's worse than hamburger hand, right?
Hamburger hand? What was that?
Don't you get hamburger hand?
No.
No.
So hamburger hand is when you eat a hamburger and the smell and the taste of the hamburger stay with your hand for like 5 hours. That's hamburger hand.
Grim.
You get manure body.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got manure legs. Oh, he's got manure legs. Yeah. Because, I mean, my thought is, I mean, the smell's going to be overpowering. But, like, do you reckon you just try and signal the police's attention as quickly as possible? Would you try and hide out in the silo full of cow shit? I think I'd give up pretty quickly myself.
If I was the police, I'd just be having a riot saying, oh, you're a bit scared, mate, because something smells.
Oh, we have to wait half an hour for a rope.
Yeah. Oh, so the what you're going to do, Kat, is essentially break the Geneva Convention and torture this poor bastard.
No, I'm just suggesting the actions of what may have happened. I don't know. They're on a farm. They've got to get this guy out. Probably nothing around that you could use to do that quickly.
It's just karma then. That's what he gets for breaking in stealing a car, breaking into people's houses.
I guess he couldn't be accused of soiling the manure because it's already soiled, right?
Yeah, he's contaminated that manure. They can't use it anymore. It's got too much leg in it. The manure smells like legs. disgusting. So the 45-year-old from Salzlandkreis has been arrested. And he also, sadly, is suffering from a severe hypothermia. And he was taken to hospital under police escort. So that puts a whole new dimension on it. Not only was it a silo full of cow shit, it was a silo full of freezing cold cow shit, which I'm not sure makes it any better whatsoever.
I kind of always imagine that something that would always, like, that would always stay just a little bit warm, you know? It's giving off gases and everything. That stuff is alive, basically.
Yeah.
Have you ever driven past a silo farm when you know silos when you're on the motorway or whatever? Mm-hmm. And it's just like so penetrating. Can you imagine having that right beside your face? Mm-hmm. I don't think you'd be able to breathe very well.
Well, I used to live in Fürth, which is near Nuremberg, and the area of Fürth, I lived almost in the centre, and Fürth's renowned for being quite close to a waste treatment plant. And when the wind blows in the wrong direction, as it frequently tends to, Fürth is just covered by a cloud of shit smell, basically. So I feel like I'm kind of prepared for the worst eventualities of that silo.
You lived in that place?
On like a sunny day in the summer, and you'd open the windows and have to instantly close them because it smelled so, so bad. It was horrific.
Wow, it's like a real estate agent's puzzle game. Yeah, right. Wonder what the turnover's like. You only bring people to look at the house when the wind is blowing in a certain direction.
Yeah.
What's the worst thing you've ever smelt? The worst thing I've ever smelt was a pig farm.
Oh, that's a pretty bad smell. I'd say that. I've smelled a lot of terrible things. I played rugby in Scotland. There's been some pretty smelly people I've encountered. I actually think the worst smell I've ever encountered was on the U-Bahn in Nuremberg in the depths of summer. And it was some bloke who got on. He just smelled appalling. So that would probably be one of the worst things I've ever smelled.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear mine?
Go on.
Yeah.
It was the house of a person who was like, you know, what do they call it? Just someone who's really untidy, but literally collected rubbish in their house for years and years. And they also died in the flat. And I was in there cleaning it out. It was full on.
So, but that's one of those things, isn't it? It's the smell. Some people just can't handle it. Some people can deal with that stuff much better. The visual is the problem.
In this case, it was the surprise element because, you know, you're picking things up and you don't know what's going to be underneath.
Yeah, it's grim. Yeah, maybe now you've said that, being waist deep in cow shit doesn't sound that awful, really. That brings us to the end of the show. We're off to go smell things and see which is the worst. If you are enjoying the podcast, why not give us a rating on Apple Podcasts, which only takes a minute and can really help us. You can also rate us on Spotify, so chuck some stars our way there as well. Retweet us, share a link, or post with the hashtag DecadesFromHome, all lowercase, on Twitter. As ever, if you have any questions, feedback, or maybe an article or topic you'd like us to cover, you can tweet Dillion at DillionAlgebra, Kat at DeepishNimmerin, and you can tweet me at 40% German. You can also get us on Instagram at 40% German. And Kat's obviously managing that account, so go over there and say hi when you get the chance. You can also get us on decadesfromhome@gmail.com. If you have time, take a look at 40%german.com. Weekly articles are up every Saturday. All that's left to say is thanks, and bis zum nächsten Mal. Tschüss!
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 So, Kat, say something funny.
I thought of saying something, but then I thought it's a little bit off colour. And it might raise more questions than it solves.
Well, I feel like now or never, right?
I was going to say, I've seen a few comments on social media, but contrary to popular belief, I did not eat dilly.
Who said that you've eaten dilly?
Nobody. I made it up.
The poor woman takes a break from the podcast and suddenly it's cannibalism. What?